Like theirs.
Petey looked back at the approaching line to double-check.
How the hell did you know that?
There was the ghost of a shrug from the giant, but his voice was still impassive.
Because we're as suspicious of them as they are of us. Stands to reason. We don't spook them, they'll be fine.
Petey turned back to his leader.
Kay, you're the boss.
Sure am. And you boys on the roof, remember that.
The giant indicated by tone alone that he had noted the way in which the work crew had stopped in order to watch the approaching line. The hardness in his tone made them resume their work with alacrity.
They gonna be a problem?
Looks like they're wary rather than hostile.
Let's hope it stays that way. I don't think any of us are up to a firefight right now.
I'll second that.
Ryan continued on, his people following, until he was a few hundred yards from the waiting Sekhman. Noting that the large and muscular Sekhman had his blaster held across his chest, but with the barrel pointing down, Ryan took one hand from his stire and waved slowly and carefully. He called out in a hoarse and cracked voice that barely carried across the space between them.
Hey! We've been in the desert for 3 days. We don't want a firefight. Just a little water and direction to the nearest ville.
The sheer number of words was too much for Ryan's damaged and dry throat.
Okay, y'all just put those blasters down and leave them before you come any farther, and we'll be just fine.
Ryan stopped his people and held ground at the distance.
Afraid we can't do that, friend. I appreciate you don't want strangers coming on you with blasters out, but we can't just leave ourselves defenseless.
The Sekhman didn't reply at first. The one-eyed man's refusal, albeit in a non-threatening manner, left him nonplussed. Ryan noted the work party's leadership order by the way in which the Sekhman looked toward the tall, dark figure who had been standing all the while with his back to them. The giant turned slowly and took in the companions with a long, slow gaze. Despite the distance, and despite the fact that the giant's eyes were hidden by the shade cast from the brim of his hat, Ryan felt his gaze and that of the giant meet. He felt that he was being assessed, and hadn't been found wanting. The giant spoke to both the Sekhman and the companions, and the quiet voice carried across the still desert air.
It's okay, Petey. You people can keep your blasters. Just holster them, and don't move too fast. The Sek boys here can get a mite jumpy.
Ryan paused for a second, then assented.
Okay, we'll do that.
He swung the stire across his shoulder. Behind him, the rest of the companions holstered their blasters. Ryan waited until they had all complied, then turned back.
Okay to come on now?
The giant nodded. It was the slightest of movements, but in contrast with the stillness of his stance, was an almost shocking movement.
I appreciate your caution.
As they began to move the last 100 yards to the cinderblock house, the workers on and around the roof stopped to watch. Sensing that they wouldn't work properly until their curiosity was satisfied, Crow called a halt to their work and the beginning of a rest break. The men had all descended and were in the shade of a camp built to one side of the newly begun extension, the tent-like structure forming a shelter from the blazing sun. They were drinking water from large drums that had been insulated to keep them cool. Crow strode away from the men and toward the oncoming group. His stride was lengthy, his gait loping with an easy animal grace. Ryan saw that the man carried no blaster, but was sure from the look of him that he would be no easy competition. The giant Native American held out his hand to Ryan.
They call me Crow, and I'm the foreman here. You screw with me, and I'll chew you before you know what's happened. But you treat me and my boys with respect, and we'll help you if we can.
Ryan took the proffered hand, noting the strong but easy grip. In his weakened condition, Crow could easily have ground his knuckles to dust, but he didn't take advantage. Ryan immediately felt sure that he could trust the man not to chill them out of hand. But he also knew that the Native American would take any precaution necessary to defend his position.
Name's Ryan. This here's J.B., Jack, Christy, Mildred, Doc Tanner, and my son, Dean.
Crow introduced his party by name. Apart from Petey, the other Sekhmen were Coburn and Bronson. Turning to where the work party was gathered, he pointed out the others as Hal, Ed, Mikey, Malloy, Tilson, Reich, Hay, and Anderson. To the tired and dehydrated Ryan, the members of the work party were hard to distinguish from one another. They were all muscular, scarred, and tanned. They all looked like men who had built muscle from hard work and could more than hold their own in hand-to-hand combat. He also observed that they all had blasters on their hips. In their current condition, his people would stand no chance if they really were in any danger. And despite the fact that he trusted Crow not to chill them, there was still something that nagged at him.
So, how come you people ended up out here in the middle of nowhere, looking like buzzard food?
J.B. interjected, before Ryan had a chance to answer.
The damn wag we traded for Jack and food back in New Mexico. Tank was rigged so that they could fool us on the gas, and the engine bearings were shot to shit because the oil was full of crap. Had to leave the bastard thing or die with it.
Ryan smiled inwardly at the sudden outburst from the taciturn man. It was a good cover story, as all of them knew the importance of keeping the Matran system as secret as possible. His own cover story would have been similar, but he was surprised at the sudden acting talent shown by his old friend. Crow settled a level gaze on J.B., trying to assess his story.
Seems to me that maybe you're not that stoop, because y'all seem too battle-wise to be taken in that easily. On the other hand, I guess we all get screwed over sometimes. So where were you headed?
Anywhere. We don't belong to any particular ville, and I guess we're just looking for somewhere. We were headed in this direction when we got stranded, so I figured that we'd just keep going. There was nothing for several days back, so we just kept going forward. Bastard of a place to get stranded.
Uh-huh. Just unlikely to see anyone coming out of that desert alive is all. There are old stories from way back beyond Skydark about that place among my people. Travelers don't come back.
Maybe we just got lucky.
Crow nodded.
Maybe. And maybe the best thing you can do right now is get some salt and water into your bodies and some rest.
If you don't take offense, we'll take our rest in shifts. You can never be too careful, right?
Ryan fixed the giant with his piercing blue eye. Crow returned the stare evenly.
I can see that. Join the others and eat. Take water. We have a supply delivered from Salvation every 2 days.
Salvation?
The ville we come from.
With that, he led them toward the sheltered area where the workers were drinking and eating from a pot of some indistinct stew that bubbled over a small heater.
Please, partake with us.
Crow indicated the food and water, and also deflected any further inquiries about Salvation. The companions took dishes from a small table, and also plastic cups that were beaten but well scrubbed, despite the dust that seemed to drift into the shelter from the air outside. They took food from the pot and water from the insulated tank. Jack looked at Crow as he scooped a cupful.
Water running low? You sure this okay?
Delivery's due soon.
Jack nodded and joined the others as they sat and ate, between mouthfuls of water that tasted sweeter and more intoxicating than any brew that they had ever encountered.
I fear First Watch may be beyond me. In point of fact, I have a notion that I may not even reach the end of my meal.
It's okay, Doc. I'll cover you.
I don't think any of us are up to it. But anyway, I'll take first.
I'll go second.
Play it by ear from there. I don't know if you could really plan a watch right now, as some of us may be more heat-affected than others.
Ryan agreed, casting a glance at Jack, who was beginning to fade into semi-consciousness even as he tried to eat and drink.
Reckon as you're right.
But even as he spoke, he became aware of a leaden feel in his limbs that hadn't been there before, a numbness that was beginning to spread. His speech had been slurred, which it hadn't been before, despite his fatigue. He looked at Christy, but the Titian-haired beauty was already beginning to fall into the same state as Jack. Changing the direction of his gaze, which in itself seemed to drag, as though he were moving in heavy, deep water, he could see that Doc had slumped into unconsciousness.
Dark night.
Slowly, like dragging himself through molten lead, an impression heightened by the burning fatigue in his limbs, Ryan looked to the armorer. JB had noticed Jack slide into unconsciousness, and Dean began to shake his head slowly as though trying to clear it. The boy tried to rise to his feet, but slumped forward as his legs failed him. Mildred's plaits shook in futile motion as she tried to clear her head.
Tranks in the... water... or the food...
Fire blast, Crow. Why did you lie?
The giant Native American shrugged.
Got the boys to slip something into what was left of the water. Couldn't take any chances. You do the same.
Ryan knew the foreman was right, and he was angry.